Good morning. You're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Hooligan. My co-host, Tovin LePan, is on assignment. Today, we're going to talk about Latinos and higher education. As Tovin recently wrote, over the past four decades, the Hispanic portion of U.S. college enrollment has steadily increased, and for the first time ever, Hispanics are the largest minority group on college campuses, a new report indicates. In Southern Nevada, institutions are executing plans to boost Hispanic enrollment and increase support services for minority students. Not only are the initiatives important to address the shifting demographics of Nevada's schools, but they also could lead to one or more of the local colleges receiving federal Hispanic-serving institution status, which can open doors to more funding. In Clark County School District, Hispanics comprise 42% of the student body, and for kindergarten through sixth grade, they make up more than half of the students. Joining me today to discuss Latinos in higher education are Magdalena Martinez, she's the Assistant Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs, and Isaac Barron, a teacher at Rancho High School. He's an advisor to the Hispanic Student Union, and he teaches government and world history, as well as adult ed. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Isaac, let's start with you. Assess for me how Nevada and our system of higher education are doing when it comes to the needs of Latinos and higher education.
I think in particular, CSN, the College of Southern Nevada, is a fantastic institution, especially for students from my demographic there. Rancho High School is 70% Latino, and quite honestly, it's a fantastic jumping off point for our students to step into higher education. Besides being 70% Hispanic, we have about 24% of our students who are ELL and English language learner. And much to the great credit, I'm happy to say that my colleagues there at the College of Southern Nevada, they have probably one of the very best ESL programs on the West Coast. They've had awards for it. So for us, you know, it's an excellent jumping off point for our students. And quite honestly, I mean, the Cheyenne campus is not that far away from Rancho High School. So it's a natural stepping stone for our students to go on there. The classes, you know, there's a wide variety of classes that appeal to them. And it's a fantastic, I highly recommend CSN. I would say that for serving, for the students who can get in, it's a fantastic place.
Okay. How about the other, how about UNLV?
Same thing. Many of our students, the ones who have maybe a little bit stronger academic background, they tend to choose either UNLV or some even choose UNR. The students who do go to UNLV, they report a lot of satisfaction. They like the programs that are available there. We have a nice wide variety of programs at UNLV. And the students who get in there, again, they report that they really like their courses. So I think they've done a very good job in making an environment that's welcoming to them and their varied talents.
Do your students report back to you that they are either prepared or maybe ill-prepared?
Well, it all depends on the students. If there are the students who are part of our MANET program or if they've been part of our honors advanced placement program, some of them find the course not just at UNLV, but around the country to be kind of easy. We have a very challenging MANET and advanced placement program. They do quite well no matter where they go. Some students, they might find it a little bit tougher if they have not been part of that academic track, of course. And of course, our ELL students, the ones who go on, most of them, I think, go on to CSN, and they adjust well.
Mm-hmm. Magdalena Martinez, what's your assessment? Let's talk a little bit first about your background. You've been here two decades, but this is a kind of a second go-around for you in Las Vegas.
That's right. I'm a resident of Nevada and have been so for over two decades. I graduated from a local high school, began my college career at the College of Southern Nevada, actually, and then transferred to the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, where I received my Bachelor of Science in Business. and went to work here locally and realized that my true calling was in higher education, so pursued graduate degrees with a focus in higher education. I've been back about 6 years now, and I'm working at the Chancellor's Office at the Nevada System of Higher Education, and I've been working there for about 3 years, and in my role, I focus on issues of access, equity, and student success, particularly for our most underrepresented students and first-generation students. What we know is that Nevada has a large portion of students who are first-generation and underrepresented student populations. What we also know is that by the year 2018, 54% of Nevada jobs will require some form of post-secondary education, this according to the Georgetown report on workforce needs. And what we also know that currently about a little bit under 22% of our Nevada residents have some sort of bachelor's degree or associate's degree. So there's a gap. There's a gap that we have to address. And quite frankly, it's an economic imperative. When we look at the future of our state, when we look at the population in the pipeline, we recognize that it's increasingly diverse, and it's first generation in many regards in terms of higher education. So again, one of my roles is to work with the institutions, work across agencies, for instance, with the various school districts across the state and the Nevada Department of Education.
And one concern of people across the country with respect to public universities is the completion rate. Are the students graduating? And tell us, how do we measure up? And then is the number for Latinos better or worse than for the students as a whole, student body as a whole?
That's a very good question, and you are correct in that there has been an increased tension around the college completion agenda, particularly given that President Obama has set that as a goal for our country, that 60% of our population holds some sort of meaningful post-secondary certificate and or degree. Where does Nevada rank? Well, I don't need to tell you what lists we rank well in, what lists we don't rank well in. Clearly,
I'm not familiar with any lists that we rank well in.
Well, okay. Clearly, the K-12 is an important partner in this endeavor. And in higher education, we recognize this. And I think that now more than ever, there are stronger partnerships. There's greater alignment and collaboration in terms of policy and practice. We wish we were able to graduate more students.
Roughly what percentage do graduate?
It varies from institution. Clearly, the more selective the institution is, the greater the success rate. And this is not this is not isolated to Nevada. If you look across the country, two-year institutions have a much lower college graduation rate than, say, four-year institutions, particularly selective institutions. And what we know also is that our students have changed dramatically from when you and I went to college, perhaps. The majority of students across the country, and particularly here in our state, attend college part-time. And they do so managing multiple priorities. So not only are they going to college, but they're also, you know, holding a full-time job, perhaps taking care of a family. And so all of this juggling clearly is going to impact how quickly they move through a college degree.
Mm-hmm. Isaac, let's talk about K-12, because this seems like a significant challenge for the system. The higher ed system is just getting graduates and graduates who are prepared for college. According to a June report from Education Week, just 29.6% of our Hispanic students of the class of 2008 graduated with a regular diploma. What do you see happening on this part of the school district to turn that around?
Specifically here in the Clark County School District, well, you know, I mean, I have here a couple of accountability reports. And like, for instance, here for 2010, 2011, it lists here at Rancho High School, 24% of our population is LEP, limited English proficiency. Compare that to, say, Foothill with 1.9. But at the same time, our district has gone ahead and rolled back their services for ESL. For instance, they have defunded the position of the LFP coordinator, which is a very important position, and they've cut that position from all the schools. Okay, at my if we had 24% in my school who are limited English proficient students, do we have the resources to help these students to reach proficiency? We do not. We do not have, and we'll look across the school district, we'll see that these programs are being eliminated or curtailed, and I can't see how, if we want to raise the amount of kids who are, and most of course that these students who are limited English proficient are Latino,
mm-hmm.
Okay, how are we going to graduate more students when at the same time the district is actually cutting back on its ESL services, and if you were just to go and look at a course catalog at Rancho High School, or just look at the amount of courses that are available for these students, the support's not there. So already, and I'm sure if we look at the rest of the schools, from what I've been hearing from my colleagues who are in ELL programs at other schools, same thing are happening there. It's like it's a system-wide thing. So on one hand, we're lamenting the fact that we're graduating less Latino students, but yet when we have a need, we're not addressing this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one major problem I see here. It's a dichotomy here. They're just not matching up.
So you're unimpressed with Superintendent Dwight Jones and his graduation initiative.
I just don't think perhaps they've overlooked it. I understand.
Is the goal to mainstream the students faster, or what is the thinking there? Do you know?
Well, I think that the biggest problem was they were looking for places to cut. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And they hacked, they cut, they slashed, and one of the places where they slashed, of course, was in ELL. Now I can't tell you why. I don't know their motivations, but it happened there. And you can mainstream kids all you want, but if you don't, for instance, for special education, we mainstream kids, but there are actually teachers who in what's called a CC class. You have an expert who's a special education teacher who actually helps plan and carry out those lessons in those classes. You don't have the same thing for ELL, even though you'll have kids who are very low English proficient kids mixed in there. So it's not quite the same thing. Again, we're asking more and more of the regular teachers to come up with it, and I'm not, it's not something that we're whining here. I mean, this is something that's actually happened. So my first issue was this: we want to have more students who go on to higher education, but we are at the same time taking away these resources.
Is that the biggest barrier? I mean, is that why that number is so low? Is it language or
language is one, economy is another one. I mean.
Kids are dropping out of school to work.
In our culture, it's not considered something that's negative. If your kids drop out and they go to work, it's not necessarily considered a bad thing. If you were to go ahead and ask many of these kids, why did you drop out? We have kids who actually literally have to, because of the economic downturn, they have to go to work to help out, the family finances. That's a reality. We see it not just once, not twice, but several times. I would say
is that something that we need to address, and how would we do so?
Well, that's only one factor. Part of it's going to be the entire economy of the city, but that's just like one factor of many. We have quite a few other factors.
If I may respectfully disagree, I believe that particularly among Latino Hispanic families, education is a high priority. And I can tell you that from lived experiences. My mother has a second grade education. My father was a farm worker. I'm one of six. And education is a priority. And quite frankly, every Latino student and family that I've ever spoken to know the value of education and encourage their children to continue in completing their high school and continuing on to college.
Well, how big a priority could it be if only 29.6% of them are graduating?
Well, I have to tell you that how you calculate graduation rates varies depending on what formula you're using. And
but even if we're twice that I mean, you'd still be less than 60%.
Right. I agree with you. I think that there is a lot of work to be done, but I think that oftentimes we place the responsibility squarely on the shoulders of the students and the parents. And my perspective is that this is a joint responsibility, and that institutions, teachers, educational leaders, we all need to take responsibility for this. This is not just squarely on the shoulders of parents who just want their children to go to work. Clearly, the economy has an impact on us all, and particularly if you're poor and, you know, it's you have to make a decision between eating and not eating. But I think that the conversation needs to be switched over to what do we do jointly as a community of educators, as institutions, and how do we communicate better and how do we align our policies better so that the greatest probability and opportunity for student success can be the result. I don't think that continuing to talk about that, you know, Hispanic or other families, you know, don't see education as valuable will leverage this conversation much. I think the focus now needs to be on issues of practice and policy and how that is aligned with our overarching goals of greater student success.
For the record, I never said that our cultural community mm-hmm. does not place an emphasis on it. Matter of fact, it is, like you said, it's true, it is a high priority. But just the other day, I had a conversation with a parent. I called home because I haven't seen her daughter in 3 weeks. Matter of fact, I've never met the girl. She's supposed to be in my class. Never met her. She didn't know what was going on with her own kid. Okay, it's not that she didn't care. She didn't know what was going on with her own kid. Her kid works, you know, has a swing shift type job. But whatever number that our robo calls to let her know that her kid's not showing up hasn't made to her. We're talking about a single parent, okay, who has very little access to technology, so she could actually see how her daughter is going to school. I mean, we have a fantastic program called Parent Link, in which, you know, if the parents who are listeners are probably very familiar with it. But less than half of our parents who are Latino actually have access to a computer at home. They have no idea that their kids aren't showing up. If they did, I mean, they could go ahead and actually access it from their smartphones. But they don't have that kind of access. We can't just brush away, you know, these kind of very fundamental facts. You know, they cannot be explained away. This is a societal issue. Okay. I said before that there are it's actually not just one thing to point to. As Americans, we like to have just one thing to point to, the magic bullet. There's not a magic bullet to when we're talking about the Latino graduation issue. And quite honestly, economy is one thing. Access to technology is another thing. I mean, I've been doing this thing now for as a teacher for 18 years. This is my 16th year at Rancho High School. And kids walk away from their education, but they walk back. They walk back. The other thing that I don't see, I'd like to see a better or a bigger interest in the re-engagement of our students after they walk away. The grand majority of them come back. I know because I teach adult education. I call them the drop-ins, okay? They do come back. They do understand the importance of education, and they are striving. But there are certain inequities that are built into our system, which make the barriers that they see that they face just a little bit higher, just a little bit tougher. And quite honestly, the kids who do get through high school, I'm saying get through because I alluded to this a little bit earlier, they're finding another barrier when they want to go ahead and seek higher education at CSN. Now, I mean, I looked here on the website, and it says here, follow your path to success. It says, recent Nevada high school graduate, follow this path if you earned or will earn a Nevada high school diploma. Does not include certificate of attendance or GED test within the last year. It says, first-time college student, no. New transfer student, no. What does it say anything about students who have finished their education at the high school but yet have not passed the proficiency exam? There's nothing, according to this, I mean, right away, you know, if a kid was actually in that position and want to look at this and maybe continue with their education. Our community college, which is what CSN actually is as a community college, apparently is going to be turning them away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in there, I guess I forget who said that they were they in the report that Tovin wrote that I guess it seems that our school, our CSN, would like to have a 25% Latino population. Well, if that's the fact, why are they cutting kids away? Why are they turning kids away who have gone through educational system? They have not passed the proficiency exam, one of them, one of four tests, which are can be quite challenging, especially if you're an ELL student. Instead of being able to continue along their educational track, CSN now is putting another barrier to their continuing education.
Magdalena, do you want to address that?
So
maybe it's let me just interject here. Maybe isn't it reasonable though that someone should have to have passed proficiency exams if they're going to do higher education?
Well, we're talking about a community college here. We're not talking about Harvard. With all due respect, I already said earlier before that CSN is a fine college of higher learning, but it is a community college. It's supposed to be open to the community. Mm-hmm. We're going to find people who are not going to pass the proficiency exam. I would say if we took that proficiency exam, I think that a lot of people in the public don't realize just how challenging that is, especially if you are a student who, you know, if you're an IEP student, in other words, special education, if you have a learning disability, they give you an adjusted diploma if you can't pass it, okay, if you can't pass the proficiency exams. I'm probably going off into another topic, but, you know, the proficiency exam is actually a very poor way of gauging what a student knows or doesn't know. In talking with other people at the State Department of Education, not everyone agrees with the proficiency exam in its current version, and you know they have talked about making alternative ones, but they still haven't worked that out. You know, we seem to be again we as Americans we like to have one thing we can point to, one bit of data that we can point to that shows whether a person is proficient or not. To begin with, the Nevada High School Proficiency Exam is not an accurate measure of what a student can or can't do. And last Friday, I took a group of students to the Hispanic Youth Leadership Summit. That was, and I'm here, I'd like to thank again Commissioner Lawrence Weekly who put that on. And I had a substitute who took over my class. That substitute happens to be one of my former ESL students. Now, she'd only been in the country 2 years when I met her. You know, she came in as an eighth grader. I met her as a 10th grader. She made remarkable progress, but could just not, at the very end, could not score well enough to pass the math test the math test and the writing test. Well, if back then, if CSN had had the same policy it has now to deny them an opportunity, she wouldn't have done what she wound up doing. She went ahead and what did she do? Well, she went on to CSN, where she earned not one, but two associate's degrees, and she transferred over to UNLV, where she got her bachelor's degree in psychology. And now she's getting ready to go on to start her master's degree.
Okay, we should address this question of access. You're listening to Neon Eden on KUNV 91.5. My guests today are Magdalena Martinez. She's the Assistant Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs at the Nevada System of Higher Education, and Isaac Barron, who teaches government and world history at Rancho High School. And we're talking about Latinos in our higher education system. Talk about access, Magdalena. Have we limited it too much?
Well, that's an excellent question. And what we know is that community colleges historically were established as an open access institution. You're absolutely correct, that anyone could come and anyone could attend for a variety of reasons, be it professional development or enrichment purposes or actually brushing up on your skills or actually pursuing a degree. The reality, however, is now that community colleges have become essentially transfer centers in many places. And if you ask across the board students who are attending community colleges, and these are national studies, this is not just, you know, anecdotal evidence, the overwhelming majority, particularly when it comes to Latino students, over 60% of Latinos who enter college for the first time do so at a community college. Okay, they do so for a number of reasons, primarily availability of courses, size of institution, and affordability, right? And so what our community colleges have become are transfer centers, right? And so this makes it difficult to assess whether a community college is successful or not, right? So that's one issue. Community colleges have become transfer centers. The other issue is that for so long, community colleges basically were an open access. And so anybody that was interested in pursuing a degree or taking courses, they could. However, what we are finding is that when students are not prepared for the rigors of college, even at a community college, community colleges has standards, and they have to meet accreditation standards, and they have to prepare students to transfer successfully and just be, you know, productive citizens for a particular area that they're pursuing. What we are finding is that students are not completing their courses, and they're not completing key milestone courses. So, for instance, English and math are big ones. We know that in our state, as across the country, there are many students that have to take remedial courses. And we can sit here and talk about the reasons why, but as higher education, we've accepted responsibility for that, and we've accepted the fact that some individuals, as maybe some of the students that you've worked with, only need a certain area with remediation, yet they have to take a whole course just to get to the next step. So what our institutions are doing is they're redoing remedial education, essentially, right? And they are looking at tailoring it more specifically to the needs of students so that they can get in, get out, and get on to the next step and be successful, whether they're pursuing a certificate or a degree or transferring, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you're referring to is the admission standards that have continued to evolve. And it is the case that now students will have to have a high school diploma in order to benefit from attending college. This is not to say that we're going to close the door on everyone else. And there are alternative routes to a community college and the other institutions in our state. But it starts with the student taking the first step and going to the institution or their counselor at their high school and exploring those options. Clearly, the interest that we have is for students to be successful, and we can't continue to just allow students to enroll and not be successful. That we have to take responsibility for that. And so what we're doing is we have, you know, partnerships with researchers from around the country and inside the state looking at student data. What are the most meaningful points? Where do we need interventions? How do we think about or how do we develop policies and practices so that students will be successful and be able to move through their educational trajectory? Otherwise, what is happening is students are attending college, taking out loans, and not completing their courses or their degrees, but they still have this debt. And that's a disservice for our students in our community.
All right, on that note, I would like to thank you both for being here. We'll have to just continue this conversation because it's obviously deeply important to the future of the state of Nevada. My guests have been Magdalena Martinez. She's the Assistant Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs, and Isaac Barron. He's a teacher at Rancho High School. We thank you both for being here. Our producer is Steven Zeller. You've been listening to Neon Eden. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.